We have spent the last 2 weeks talking about what we call the Lord's Prayer, the model prayer that Jesus gave to us. We have talked about the different aspects, and I do believe that every one of them is important. I believe this morning that we have to learn to forgive. If we don't learn to forgive, that our prayers will be hindered. And I believe today that we know that we should pray. I don't know of anybody that if you ask them what is one of the spiritual disciplines, I don't know that anyone would say, well, prayer is definitely not one of them. We know that we should pray. We could go a lot of different directions here today in trying to make this applicable to our lives. But let me just begin by saying that the reason prayer doesn't work most of the time is simply because we don't pray. It was said of Abraham that he was a friend of God. If you study the life of Abraham, you will find that Abraham had a place that he would go and meet with God every day. Now let me just tell you today that I understand life is busy. I understand probably as well as anyone that we can overextend ourselves to the point that something has to give. The thing is, what we do is we let the spiritual go instead of the natural go. Because our flesh wants to be entertained. Our flesh wants and enjoys being with friends. And maybe it's just that your flesh enjoys being alone with a good book or playing a game or watching something on Netflix or whatever device that you might use. The bottom line is that if we are going to be like Abraham and be a friend of God, you must work on the friendship. Jesus would say to his disciples, I have not called you servants, because the servants don't know what the master does, but I have called you friends. In other words, he said, I am choosing to have a relationship with you. I just say to you today that some of us need to check our thinking. Yes, we are servants of the Lord. Yes, we are to do what he asks us to do. I'm not here to discount any of that. But there is a place with God that we can become more than just his servant. We can become more than just his quote-unquote lackey, where we're like, what would you like me to do now? And sometimes we get that conception of God, that God's just the puppet master and we're supposed to be the puppet and we just do and go and do exactly what he wants us to do. And that is a good thing to say, Lord, I want to do what you want me to do. But we need to shift our thinking just a little bit to where we say, God, I don't just want to be a servant, but I want to be your friend. Now, here's the thing about friendship. We all have those, let's call them long lost friends. I have a friend in Indiana that I roomed with at Bible college more years than I'd like to count ago. We don't speak very often. I don't call him up and say, hey, it's time for our once a month meeting. I'll meet you in Indianapolis. Let's have lunch. But we can pick up kind of where we left off when we get together. Hey, how you doing? But it's not the friendship that I have with my wife. It's not the friendship even that I have with you, where that I see you on a weekly basis and we learn about each other and we learn each other's likes and dislikes. When you enter in, if you're not in a friendship relationship with God, if you're not saying, Lord, I want to be your friend, then there goes my thoughts. I would say to you tonight that it's time to say, Lord, I want to be more than a servant. I want to be your friend. Well, how do I do that? Someone new comes into your life and you want to build that relationship. You want to say, Rick, I want to be your friend. Don't know anything about you. We just met. But I want to be, first of all, there is a choice that says, and sometimes it's, man, we hit it off and we like the same things. We immediately realize, man, we enjoy the same things. We're going to be good friends. Other times we say, I want to be your friend, but I don't know anything about you. I need to figure out. And sometimes with God, that's the way it is. We have to say, Lord, I want to learn your ways, because Scripture tells me that His ways are not my ways and His thoughts are not my thoughts. So if I'm going to be a friend of God, there has to be a place that I say, God, I want to know you. I want to become like you. I want to enjoy the things that you enjoy. I'm sure that all of us that are in this room that are married can relate to this to a certain degree. When you got married, there were things that your wife enjoyed that you didn't enjoy. And vice versa, things that you enjoy that she didn't. Maybe my wife and I are just odd. We say that sometimes when we look at things that happen. We're like, you know, maybe we're just different. Maybe that we don't have it all together the way we think we do. There's things that I didn't enjoy, and we, you know, as you move in your relationship, things change. But we used to go shopping when we were younger, and that wasn't something that I really enjoyed. I wasn't into all of that, you know. It just, you go, I'll stay home. No, I want you to go with me. I want to be with you. And so begrudgingly, you know, you go to the mall. Fine. And as she drags you around, looking at shoes, we'll use that as an example. And she's like, oh, aren't these cute? And you're like, yeah, they're shoes. Do you like them? Then let's get them. No, let's look at something else. You know, you do that very often, and before long, you're walking in going, honey, what do you think about these? You like these? Why? Because you have shopped with her long enough to know what she goes in and picks up and says, ooh, these would be nice. And sometimes, you know, she slaps me and says, stop it, because I'll go in and pick something up that I know she won't like. What about these, babe? Knowing that she's going to say, put those down. You know better than that. What am I saying? I may not have enjoyed it when we started. It may not have been something that I was like, woohoo, let's go shoe shopping. But by the end of the trip, I'm involved and saying, hey, what about this? Do you like this? Do you think this? You know, I know you're looking for shoes to go with this outfit. Would this match? Would that? And sometimes with God, if you'll allow me to use that carnal example, it's about getting involved with what He's doing, even though I may not like it. I may not enjoy it. I may not be super excited about what God's pulling me toward and asking me to do. But prayer is a place that I become friends with God and say, okay, God, if you want to do that, I'm in. Let's do it. Prayer is your place of refuge when you need it. Because let's be honest, we all deal with seasons of trouble and times of sorrow. Seems like life has overwhelmed us. Finding the motivation to pray, is difficult. We'd rather just pull the covers up over our head and pretend that nobody knows where we're at. David would say it this way: hear my cry, O God. Attend unto my prayer. From the end of the earth will I cry unto thee. When my heart is overwhelmed, lead me to the rock that is higher than I. For thou hast been a shelter for me, and a strong tower from the enemy. Psalm 61, 1 through 3. We need to learn to go to God in times of trial, in times of not understanding. Sometimes it's easy to pray in those times. You know, your baby's sick and you don't know what to do, and the doctors have said, we've tried everything. It's easy to pray then. God, my baby's sick. You got to do something. We'll do whatever we need to do to move heaven for God to do what He needs to do. But what about those times that you're just overwhelmed and you just don't feel like anything? It's not that anything in particular is wrong, but it just feels like life has come crashing down around you. And you just say, I just don't feel like praying. Those are the times, and I know what you're going to say here, but those are the times that we need to pray the most. Those are the times when we need to take a step back and say, okay, I'm going to go to my friend. We all need a friend when things go wrong. We need somebody to come alongside us and say, hey, it's going to be okay. You're going to make it. It's going to be all right. Sometimes they come and say, you know what? You're right. They did you wrong. What you're dealing with, what you're going through, it's not right, but we're going to get through this. It's going to be okay. We're going to make it. And if God is our friend, we can go to Him and we can tell Him, God, I don't like where I'm at right now. This is not fair. What they did is not right. Sometimes God says, grow up. Sometimes God says, get over yourself. It's not that bad. But there's other times that God says, you know, you're right. They did you wrong. But you can get through this. You can make it. I'm going to be your friend. I'm going to walk with you. I'm going to lead you. I'm going to guide you. But you cannot build that friendship relationship without prayer. Notice Matthew 6 and verse 7. Jesus says, but when ye pray, use not vain repetitions as the heathen do, for they think that they shall be heard for their much speaking. Matthew 6 and 7. I know you've heard me say this before, but Jesus did not say in that verse, if you pray. It doesn't seem to be an option with the Lord. It wasn't him saying, now, when things go bad, if you decide to pray, then don't use vain repetition. No, it seemed to be a practice that was done, and Jesus expected them to pray. It's almost as if he assumes that there will be things that are a part of our life if we claim to be his disciples. And prayer seems to be one of them. Genesis 19:27 is where it said Abraham got up early in the morning to the place where he stood before the Lord. It seems that Abraham had a special place every day that he spent time with the Lord. Without trying to be redundant today, let me ask this question. Do you have a place that you spend in prayer with him? Do you have a time that you say, Lord, I want to just be in your presence. I just want to spend time with you. Now, I understand today that you don't have to have a certain place. Years ago, there was a young man. The family moved away. But they had changed houses. They were moving into a new house. And he was, I don't know, 7 or 8, 9 years old. He walked into the house and he said, this is a great house. I'm like, okay. He said, the closets are big enough that I can get into and pray. He took the verse literal that Jesus said, enter into your closet and pray. Now, if you have a prayer closet, if you have a room that's closet big enough that you crawl in and that's your place to pray, then by all means, use the closet. But all I'm saying is, find a place. What is your place? What is your time? I know some of you are saying, my time's in the car. Because all these idiots around me make me pray. Lord, please help me get to work on time. Don't let anybody hit me. Don't let me get a ticket. That's not really prayer. We're talking about two-way conversation. There's a reason why that they call it the discipline of prayer. Incredible to me, and I tend to be one of them, I suppose. But it's incredible how undisciplined we are as humans. There are a few that are disciplined, that have a daily routine, that say, hey, I'm going to get up and I'm going to hit the gym, and then I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to go to work. Most folks are not that way. Most folks are like, what time is it? Oh, I got to be to work in 10 minutes? Okay, I better get in the car and go. I did that yesterday. I was here at the church working, and I went to my office because I had to teach a class at 1:50, and I set a timer. I later found out that I'd turned the buzzer off on the timer because I had used it, I guess, at school and turned the buzzer completely off, and so it went off, but I didn't hear it. And I looked at the clock and went, oh, it's 1:30. I'm supposed to be gone. So I jumped up, ran out, jumped in the truck, and thought, I can make it up on the freeway. I'll get there. Pulled on to 75, Yeah, there was a patching crew. I was late. But by and large, that's the way we live our life. I know it takes me 20 minutes to get there. I got to be there at 1:50. I'm going to leave at 1:25. That gives me 5 minutes leeway so I can get there and be on time. And we go, go, go. And there's a reason why in Scripture, over and over and over, Scripture tells us to just be still. Moses would tell the children of Israel at the Red Sea to be still and see the salvation of the Lord. David would say to find a place at the house. He said, my foot almost slipped. Then I went into the house of the Lord. He went in to just be still. It is important this morning that we find a place that we can just be still. Paul would say to the church at Thessalonica to pray without ceasing. That seems like a tall order, doesn't it? Well, Pastor, you're telling me that I should become a hermit, move to a cave, and spend all of my waking hours just praying. I mean, that's what he said, pray without ceasing. I believe that Paul was talking about an attitude of prayer. It was an attitude of mind and spirit. That God at any moment could speak to us. That in that friendship relationship, that God could simply say, hey, I want you to do this. And we would say, got it, I'll do it. There are a few people in my life that they could call and say, I need you to come right now. And it wouldn't matter what I'm doing. It wouldn't matter if I was in the Caribbean with my wife and we were enjoying an anniversary trip. If they called and said, I need you on a plane and I need you home right now, we would get on a plane and I would come home. My parents are one of them. And we have people in our life like that. That if they called and said, I need you right now, it didn't matter what you're doing, you're going to drop, you're going to leave work, you're going to leave vacation, whatever it is, you're going to drop it and you're going to get there. But when it comes to calling God our friend, can God, if you'll let me use the example, can God call you and say, hey, I need you to drop what you're doing and come right now, and you say, okay. Now, there's others, and I'm just being honest here. This weekend, there were some things that we had going on that I just didn't get to everything. There was a viewing and a funeral that I would have liked to have been at, but I also had an obligation that I said, I'll be there to teach a class, and I missed my daughter's performance, got there after the performance to go have lunch or dinner with them, but sometimes it's not one of those things that you're like, oh, this person is a true friend. I'm going to drop what I'm doing. I'm going to go to this because it's something that if I have the time, I'll do it. But I didn't have the time, so I didn't get there. Don't allow your friendship with God to become that kind of a friendship where it says, I'm your friend if I can get there. I'll be there if you know, nothing else takes place. I have other obligations, you know, Lord, and allow it to be a regular set time. Don't allow your only prayer time to be at church? What do you do when God wakes you up, or when you wake up at 3:30 in the morning? Do you say, Lord, what would you say to me? Lord, help me to be attentive to you. Or do you lay there for a few minutes, and if you can't go back to sleep, get up and, you know, well, maybe I need to get a drink of water. Maybe I need to do something else. Or you lay there and toss and turn. Get up the next morning, you're like, man, I must have really struggled. The covers are all tore off. When he wakes you up and says, hey, I want to spend a few minutes with you, when you establish a routine. I'm listening to a book right now about habits. Supposedly, by the time I get done with the book, it's going to tell me, help me to change some of my habits. I'll let you know if it works. But it talks about how that we are built for habits. I was on the phone with my dad yesterday. I was going to my class. I had left here and I thought, well, you know, I'll call him back, talk to him for a few minutes while I'm going to class. And I was passing 75 and realized, I'm not going home. I got to go to Troy. Because it's the habit. We're just in the... I get on 696 and I take it all the way to the end because I'm going home. When we develop that kind of routine in prayer, it becomes automatic. It's the first thing I do in the morning. It's what I do at lunchtime. It's what I do when... And you fill in the blank, because it might be different for every one of us. If you're a night person, then it might be that at night, when everybody else goes to bed, that you find your place and you spend it in prayer. Jesus stressed the importance of secret prayer as opposed to public prayer. I think there's a reason for that. I think there's a place for both, but I think there's a reason that Jesus said, listen, you need to find a place in private and pray, and not just pray in public. Why? Because sometimes when we pray in public, as much as some of you will argue this point, we try to impress folks. You know, Brother Ryan, we want you to pray the invocation. And so you stand up, and instead of just saying, you know, Lord, bless this place, let your power fall, you go into this big, long, our omnipotent Heavenly Father, we are so gracious. I've been there and watched that happen. Not with Brother Ryan, but with others. Because it becomes, I want to be eloquent. I want folks to know that I can pray. But when you find a secret place, when you're by yourself, all of a sudden it doesn't matter what anybody says. It doesn't matter whether anybody hears me. And I've never had God hold a grudge. And there have been some pretty interesting times of prayer, conversation, where at times that I've been upset with God. God, why'd you let this happen? God, this isn't right. This isn't fair. God doesn't ever have to explain himself to me, but he always listens. If we are going to have a friendship relationship with God, we must have the discipline of prayer. You cannot grow in the grace and knowledge of truth by just reading books about it. We must have a relationship with the one that can help us grow in the grace and knowledge of truth. Okay. I'm going to overstate the obvious here, okay? It doesn't matter today, and I've said this, I know, but it doesn't matter today how much we study about prayer. It doesn't matter today how many books that we read about prayer. It doesn't matter that we study individuals that pray, and when you look through history, you'll find some that prayed and put us all to shame. I believe it was John Knox that had grooves in the floorboards by his bed because that was his prayer place, and every day he would pray. It's not enough to just know that, hey, there's power in prayer, because we all know that, and we all tend to say, yes, I know what I need to do. I know I need to pray. I know that that's what is needed. I know that's what I'm supposed to do. But if we don't do it, it doesn't do us any good. It's like the doctor saying, sir, you have heart problems. You need to lay off the red meat. And you need to stop eating all that ice cream and all of those sweets. And you need, you know, they lay it all out. And we're like, yeah, he doesn't know what he's talking about. I'm not giving up my red meat. I like my steak. That's all I've had to eat every week, every day for 30 years. That's what I want. Hamburger, all I want. Ignoring his instructions causes us to shorten our life. And I wonder today if we don't stunt our growth, let me say it that way, spiritually, because we don't take the time to pray. Lord, I want to know your will. Pastor, will you tell me? Pastor, what's God want me to do? Now let me just tell you, and I'm not trying to be rude or mean or anything like that right now, but please don't perceive it that way. But if you come to me and say, Pastor, what does God want me to do? I may have been praying about something in the church. I may have been saying, Lord, we need a toddler class. We need someone in the nursery. God, we need somebody to... And you come and say, Pastor, what can I do? I need to know. And I think, man, that's the answer to my prayer. Glad you came. God, I just prayed about that. You're the new nursery teacher. What? I don't even like kids. I can't handle babies. You want me to be in the nursery class? I've never changed a diaper in my life. What am I going to do? Please understand that there is, and I'm here to help you pray. I'm here to try and give you counsel. Try to help you walk through and navigate what that you're looking at and what you'd like to do. But I want you to be honest. If I come and say, what do you think your ministry is? Oh, Pastor, I'll do whatever. Okay, nursery class it is. Oh, wait a minute. Be honest enough to say, hey, I'll do whatever you want me to do, but nursery class, not my forte. I'd rather deal with the teenagers than the babies. Or I'd rather not deal with kids at all. Just let me shovel the walks. Let me vacuum the floor. Let me. But in prayer, you're going to find that place that God begins to say, this is a ministry that I have for you. And every one of us is called to ministry. Oh, wait a minute. I didn't sign up for that. If you are a Christian, if you are a disciple of Christ, then you signed up for ministry. Because ministry is not just standing here holding the microphone and saying, hey, this is what you need to do. You need to have a relationship with the Lord. No, ministry is finding what I can do. It's saying what needs to be done. It becomes that servant leadership that says, Lord, if you'll open a door, then I'll walk through it. What is it that you want me to do? And yes, sometimes we have to be willing to get outside of our quote-unquote comfort zone, because sometimes God pushes us to see if we're really willing. Abraham seems to be in my thoughts today. If God said to you, as He did to Abraham, Abraham, I got a promise for you, but it's going to cost you something. I know I'm not giving you King James right now, but the essence of the story is there. Abram, I want you to leave, and I want you just to start walking, because wherever you walk, I'm going to give it to you. I got to tell you, that sounds pretty good. And the first few days, first few months, that might be pretty good. All of this is mine. God's given it to me. But when I reach the desert place, when I come to the place that I've taken Lot with me, which God didn't tell him to take Lot with him. Ouch. Sometimes we take baggage God never told us to take. Lot's servants and Abram's servants get to fighting. Why? Because God didn't say take Lot. God said you go. When the struggle starts happening, sometimes of our own making, they start fussing and fighting, and we're like, Lord, I don't know what to do. And so Abram finally said, fine, we'll just divide here. You decide. You go your way. I'll go mine. Can you still say, Lord, I trust you to lead me to that place you said that you would give me? Here's something I've struggled with just a little bit. Maybe I'm being too transparent. You realize that Abraham never really saw the fruition of that dream. I'll make your descendants as the stars in the heaven, as the sands of the desert. I'll give you all. And Abraham had one son that was called the promise. Two sons that fought. Lord, you said you were going to make my descendants as the stars. Can you trust him if it doesn't happen? Oh man, I don't know where this is coming from. If it doesn't happen in your generation, can you trust him to bring it to pass? If he's going to do it for your kids and not for you? What if God does a new thing in your life? I was telling Sister Mavis this morning on the way to church. I put on some preaching and I was listening on the way in, about 20 minutes across, so I was listening to some preaching. The subject was Zacharias and Elizabeth. Zacharias was a priest. They gave birth to John the Baptist. John the Baptist was called to be a prophet. How do you train your son to be something that you're not? Zacharias was about the ceremonies of the temple. John the Baptist was about proclaiming Jesus was coming. How do you deal with something that's different than you? How do you deal when God says, oh, you want to be my friend? Okay, I'm going to walk you down this path here. And I'm going to give you something that you didn't see coming. Wouldn't it be nice if God just laid it out and said, hey, Ryan, in 2 years, I got it for you. Get your finances in order. Get your family together. 2 years, this is your next step. God doesn't always do that. Matter of fact, most of the time, God doesn't do that. Most of the time, God says now, and you're like, what? I just got a good job. I just bought a new house. Lord, I'm set. I don't want to go right now. But in prayer, building that relationship with Him, because that we are friends with Him, He can do that. He can say, this is what I need from you, but it only comes from that commitment. Let me try and wrap this up in the next couple of minutes. Let me ask you a couple of questions here. What ways has your commitment or lack of commitment affected your spiritual growth? That's tough. Lord, I want to grow spiritually, but I don't want to do anything to grow. My wife has a few plants. One of them the dog loves and eats the plant all the time. Somebody said that when they're sick that it settles their stomach, but that poor plant is mangled all the time. Get some shoots and she bites them off. The other day I cleaned it up, there's plant laying all over the floor. But if we want that plant to continue to grow, we have to do a couple things. That particular plant, we have to keep it inside because we transplanted it from Louisiana. If we put it out in the snow, it's going to die. We can't handle it. So it's inside. We water it. We make sure it gets sun. In your spiritual life, do you do the things that you need to do to grow spiritually? Woo! Quiet now. Let me ask you a practical question. Just something for you to think about. What are some practical ways that you can incorporate prayer into your daily routine? If it's not a part of your daily routine, how can you make it a part of your daily routine? Are you disciplined enough to set the clock 15 minutes early? I mean, I know the ultimate goal is, hey, we want to pray an hour a day, but can you do 15 minutes? Can you crawl out of bed? Or on the snow days that like we're supposed to have tomorrow, do you say, yeah, you know, it's snowing outside. I know if I get up, I got to shovel the walks. I'm just going to lay here for a few minutes. And then, oh, we got to go. We got to get this out the door. And we've missed that prayer. How can you incorporate it into your daily routine? How has the pace of modern life affected you and your routine? Can I just tell you, and I'll quit. Although I've got 10 minutes. And I just tell you, when you go pray, it's probably a good idea to take a pen and paper and a Bible and not your iPad or your phone. I know that goes against everything, because I'm one of those guys, everything's right here. I've got an app for prayer. I've got an app for, you laugh, but it literally, you put it in and you push the button and it gives you your top three lists, and you can add more, and it rotates them so that you can look and go, oh, I need to pray about this today. But the problem is, when I take that with me, there's also some other things on there that are not very spiritual. Word games. I got to have word games to keep my mind sharp, right? At least that's what they say. Do crosswords and it keeps your mind. I don't know if that's true or not, but we'll use whatever excuse we can. That's why it's better to leave that on the nightstand and take my Bible and a notepad and go and say, okay, Lord, I'm going to read, I'm going to write. Because if I get, I'm going to get right where we live, okay? If I get bored in prayer, that game's going to call my name. And I'm going to start playing solitaire or brick breaker or word game or whatever it is. Fortnite. Incredible how addictive that those things become. Henry Wadsworth Longfellow said this: the heights by great men reached and kept were not attained in sudden flight. But they, while their companions slept, were toiling upwards in the night. I believe it was Dave Ramsey that said, if you want to live better than everyone else, then you have to do what no one else will do, or words to that effect. The athlete Jerry Rice said pretty much the same thing. You want to do what others can't do, then you have to do what others won't do. Extra time in the gym. Extra time running sprints. Extra time on the bike. What am I saying? If you want that real relationship with God, then you have to be willing to do what others will not do. You have to be willing to set a routine and say, this is what I am going to do. I'm going to put Jesus first. My friendship, my relationship, I'm going to do it with Him first. Pray with me.